There's no one home but you. You're all that's left me too. And when my love for life is running dry, you come and pour yourself on me. If a man could be two places at one time, I'd be with you tomorrow and today, beside you all the way. If the world should stop with all things spinning slow, spend the end with you. And when the world was through, then one by one the stars would all go out. Then you.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a very busy weekend, as always, but I hope you had a chance to get out and relax and have yourself a good time and do what it is you like to do on the weekend. Go out to eat, go to the movies, go to the beach, whatever. Hope you had a good time, and that's what weekends are for so many people. Myself, I end up working on most weekends. Well, I should say all weekends. It's been a long, long time since I've had a weekend off. Anyway, we are looking forward to next weekend. Next Sunday morning, we're going to head out bright and early to Washington, D.C., going to do the show next Monday and Tuesday from the Take Back America Conference. We'll be there with some other radio folks on Radio Row and looking forward to coming back and going on with the show here. I will let you know this. Next Wednesday, there will be no show because we will be on an aeroplane flying back to good old Southwest Florida during the time. Couldn't get it any other time, the flight, so... And that reminds me, did you ever try and use Air Miles? Oh, mama, what a fun deal that is. End up not using them. Seems unless you plan a long time ahead, they're just about worthless. I found that out. Something new to me, anyway. Thanks, Delta. Thanks so very much. And tomorrow, we have a speaking engagement some distance away from here in the evening, and we'll not be able to do the program tomorrow, so we're going to have Ben... I think we're going to have Ben run a best-of show. I'll let him decide which one to run. But we'll try and keep you entertained tomorrow as well. So no show tomorrow and no show next Wednesday on account of we'll be in transit coming back to Southwest Florida. Got all that straight? Got your pen and pencil out? Marked it down on your calendar? Okay. Good enough. Lots to talk about today a little later on coming up. Right after 4 o'clock, we're going to have Brian Rothenberg, who's the communication director for the Ohio Democratic Party, on to talk about Ken Blackwell's latest caper. It seems this guy will stop at nothing to try and win an election. You know, he lied, cheated, and stole one for George Bush, and now he's going to try and do it for himself to be governor of Ohio. He's feathered his nest nicely as he has gone along. And you remember the caper last year he tried? when people brought new voter registrations to him, and he said it was on the wrong thickness of paper, the wrong stock, and it had to be on a certain thickness of paper or he wouldn't take it. He finally, after a huge outcry coming from all over the country, finally gave up on that one, and now he's got another little scam going, and we're going to talk about it later on the program. I'll tell you what, this guy Blackwell is bad, bad news. And if the people of Ohio elect this guy as their governor, if they think they got it bad right now with Taft, just you wait. This guy is a loser, a real loser. Look out, Buckeyes. I'm a former Buckeye, and I watched that thing closely. There's no way any thinking person could want this Ken Blackwell as the governor of the state of Ohio. No possible. I wouldn't care if I was a Democrat, if I was a libertarian. It wouldn't matter to me whatsoever. This guy, forget the politics of it. He is bad, and I mean bad news. I wouldn't want him as the local dog catcher. No way. He's that bad. Lots going on to talk about today. Do want to mention the signing statement, the problem that Bush has got going for him. We're going to update you on the Carol Fisher situation. What else? We're going to talk a little bit about, we spoke about greed the other day, and we're going to carry on with that subject just a little bit today. We're going to talk about real estate that I think you'll be very interested in. And what else we got on the... Oh, I see we got Bill and Ben Nelson from Nebraska as the sole Democratic senator. That's against the gay, you know, he's for the gay marriage ban. There's always one. I'm surprised our good old senator here in Florida, Bill Nelson, didn't join him in it. I'm very surprised at that. Those are the two Nelson brothers. Should be, they're not brothers, but they act like it. They both vote like Republicans all the time, but got D's behind their name. I constantly wonder about that. It's not too late to change, guys. Yeah, they probably will. You know, there's a couple of guys right there that it wouldn't surprise me, at least one, and Lieberman, too. You know, and this is one thing I hadn't thought about to talk about this today, but have you thought about this? Let's say, for example, and we all know this may be very close, let's say that we win back the Senate, and we hold it by one seat or so, and it's going to be close. It's not like we're going to win there and win it and have a 4 or 5 seat margin. That's just not going to happen. But let's suppose we get it by a one seat margin or two at the max. What happens then if Lieberman and Ben Nelson decide to flip? Have you thought about that? Could happen. Could happen. Could most definitely happen. So keep that in mind. We may have to win more seats than we thought. I hadn't thought about that then earlier. And speaking of crazy people, I ran across this article in The Guardian. Saturday, and I couldn't wait to tell you about it. I don't know how many of you have seen it. Maybe everybody has, but maybe you'll enjoy hearing my take on it. I want to talk a little bit about Bushlandia. You all know what Bushlandia is by now, I'm sure. You're the most learned audience in liberal radio. You certainly do know. Most of you do. If not, let me explain. Bushlandia are the three remaining states where Bush has a majority. He's got 52%, I believe, in Idaho, maybe 51% in Wyoming, and let's see, what's the other one? Utah, of course. Idaho, top place in the country for George Bush, 52%. Utah and Wyoming tied at 51. Utah 51, and Wyoming at 50%. And let me tell you that Utah is 51% to me is one of the great wonders of the world that a Republican president could get that low in that state. I mean, it really, and Idaho too. I mean, down to 52%. And I want to extend my apologies before I talk about this right now to any of our good liberal progressive friends who happen to live in Idaho. I've been to Idaho many times. I love the place. I think it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. A lot of it is. And one of the most interesting, too, the story with Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce Indians and all that up there. Fascinating, fascinating place. I love Idaho. However, and there's that word. Don't you hate to hear that word when someone's telling you something, however or but? One or the other. I want to read you a little story, and I'll just read some of it and throw in my 2 cents words out of the Guardian from Saturday. The governor of Idaho, a affable rancher named Jim Reich, stretched back in his chair and outlined his alternative history of the last few years in America. He says, Hurricane Katrina, they heaped that on George Bush. Sitting in his short sleeves in the blasting dry heat of an afternoon in Boise, the state capital, he says, here in Idaho, and I just love this mindset, I really do. I just like to slap somebody upside the head when I hear him talk like this. Here in Idaho, he says, we couldn't understand how people could sit around on the curbs waiting for the federal government to come and do something. We had a dam break in 1976 here in Idaho, but we didn't whine about it. A dam break? A dam break? This moron is comparing what happened on the southern Gulf Coast of Florida to the dam break that took place in Idaho? This is another one of let's pull ourselves up by the bootstrap stories, folk, that you all love so much. This is what I mean about these SOBs talking. Hey, listen, we had a dam break in 1976, but we didn't whine about it. We got out our backhoes and rebuilt the roads and replanted the fields and got on with our lives. That's the culture here. Not waiting for the federal government to bring you drinking water. In Idaho, there would have been entrepreneurs selling the drinking water. You stupid bastard. There was no drinking water there on the southern Gulf West. What'd you want them to drink that water they were walking around in? The water system in New Orleans was, you couldn't drink the water. It was all contaminated. They had to wait until someone brought water in. Oh, no, in Idaho, we had entrepreneurs that would have been selling the water. But that's not all. We've talked about the polls up there and all that. To liberals on both coasts, the article says, Idaho is redneck country, famous only for its potato industry and its white supremacist groups. It says they were based in the north of the state until 2001. What happened to them? Anybody know? They moved to Utah or Wyoming? I don't know. In fact, one of the columnists for The Nation magazine recently said sexual relations with livestock still commonplace there. Hated to throw that in there, but be sure and have the kids out of the room, but that's what they wrote. Anyway, it said, where's this part here I wanted you to be sure and hear from the governor? You know, you think you're prepared, and you got your little yellow marker out here, and you don't do what you thought you did. I think I've lost a page of this here from the... Anyway, he goes on to say that Bush is the greatest president we ever had. He did say that George Bush was just the best doggone president we ever had, and probably the smartest, too, and that's why the people of Nebraska really loved the guy. Says we've got to stick by our president because he's our president. Well, that's a bumper sticker, all right, now, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know what I did with the other page of this. I lost it. Anyway, he had a quote in there which was just precious about George Bush, how he thinks he's an absolutely wonderful president. Just thinks George Bush is just it. God's gift to the United States of America. I want to tell you something, folks. If you got a governor of your state that thinks George Bush is the greatest president we ever had, there is something seriously wrong in your neighborhood. Really seriously wrong in your neighborhood if you got one that thinks that. And this guy obviously does. He just thinks George is just wonderful. And isn't it a shame that all those people down New Orleans had to wait to get drinking water when the Idahoans would have got their own? Yes, indeed. Oh, yeah. And, of course, we've got more horror stories. And we'll talk about them a little later, coming from Iraq. But one of the things I want to talk to you about today is our dear friend, Mr. Karl Rove. That's right, Mr. Karl Rove, a man we all know and love. Well, most of you do, I'm sure, know and love Karl Rove. Anyway, he was over in Fort Lauderdale the other day, just across the alley here from where we're at, and he told an enthusiastic crowd, it says in the newspaper over there, of Broward County Republicans on Friday night, that the worst mistake the U.S. could make is to cut and run in Iraq. Without mentioning growing opposition to the war or the record low popularity in polls of his boss, President Bush, Rove gave a resounding defense of the decision to go to war 3 years ago, and he blasted Democrats who now consider the war a mistake. Rove saved his harshest criticism for the man Bush defeated in 2004, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry, who voted for the war in Iraq but now supports a deadline for withdrawing American troops in Iraq. Rove said, Kerry's instinct is to cut and run. If America cuts and run in Iraq, who's going to tell the families that their loss was in vain? Another guy that needs a good slap upside the head. So Carl, Kerry, John Kerry, he has instincts to cut and run? Tell me, Carl. Tell me about instincts to cut and run. Better yet, tell me about a bunch of guys in Washington who are the ultimate bloodthirsty war hawks who never went near a battlefield. There's certainly no shame in not having served in the military. In fact, most men have not. But Carl, there is a massive difference between not having been in the military and being someone who pushes for war at every opportunity and did not serve. If you're going to be out there hammering the drums for war, maybe you just ought to know what it's like to be there. You want to tell us, Carl, just how many of the guys who pushed hard for this war actually served in the military? You want to tell us how you can accuse John Kerry, who served his country honorably, even according to your own president, Carl? You want to tell us how you can accuse him of having instincts of cutting and running? Let's talk about it, Carl. Let's talk about the fellas in your little group who pounded the war drums long and loud but didn't serve themselves. Dick Cheney? Want to talk about him, Carl? What are his battle instincts, Carl? Junior Bush? What about his battle experience, Carl? Kerry saw plenty of battle, never cut and ran. Junior Bush cut and ran from the National Guard, though, didn't he, Carl? Still waiting for anyone from the Alabama Guard to prove that Junior Bush was ever present at the unit he was assigned to. And how about yourself, Carl? What are your battle instincts, Carl? Since you like to talk about John Kerry's battle instincts, tell us about yours. You must be one hell of a brave guy. You must have a drawer full of medals you won for bravery. I mean, talking about Kerry like that, you must feel that your military experience is vastly superior to his, huh, Carl? And how about some of the guys who really guided us into Bush's war? You know, Carl, the guys who talked him into it, there's yourself, of course, but then there was Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl. Let's take a look at that little situation just for a second. Let's take a look at the two groups that you like to make fun of. Let's take a look at Jack Murtha, for example. 37 years in the Marine Corps, and you guys are cutting him to pieces nowadays. A Bronze Star and two Purple Hearts, and retired from the Marine Corps as a colonel. Dick Gebhardt, former House Minority Leader. Representative David Bonnier, Staff Sergeant, United States Air Force. Senate Minority Leader, former Senate Minority Leader, Tom Daschle, United States Air Force. Former Vice President Al Gore, enlisted in August of 1969, sent to Vietnam in 1971 as an Army journalist. Former Senator Bob Kerry, Medal of Honor winner. Senator Daniel Inouye, Medal of Honor, World War II. Senator John Kerry, Silver Star, Bronze Star, Combat 5, and three awards of the Purple Heart for his service in combat. Charlie Rangel, Staff Sergeant, former Senator Max Cleland, the guy that you bastard just crucified, gave all of his limbs in the service of the United States, and look what you did to him. Silver Star and Bronze Star. Ted Kennedy, United States Army. Senator Tom Harkin, Lieutenant U.S. Navy. Senator Jack Reed, U.S. Army Ranger. Fritz Hollings, U.S. Army officer in World War II. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Let's take a look at your boys, Carl. You want to talk about cutting and running and battle instincts, Carl? Let's look at your boys. Let's look at this side of the ledger, okay? We've got John McCain, a true war hero, a man of courage, a man with real guts, a man that served his country far more than honorably. That's just about where it ends. Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert did not serve. Former House Majority Leader Dick Armey avoided the draft, did not serve. Former Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who by the week, this is his last week in office, he avoided the draft and did not serve. And you know why he said he did not serve? Because, he said, so many minority youth had volunteered that there was no room for patriotic folks like himself. Yeah. House Majority Whip Roy Blunt did not serve. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist did not serve. Mitch McConnell, Kentucky, did not serve. Rick Santorum did not serve. Trent Lott did not serve. Jeb Bush did not serve. Newt Gingrich. Ronald Reagan. The idea that you, Carl, would talk about some Democrat cutting and running is offensive. See, Carl, it's a bit hard for some of us to give you even an ounce of credibility when you talk about somebody else's instincts. Your instincts, Carl, seem to be politically cut the throat of anyone who gets in your way. Your instincts, Carl, seem to be to smear and defame good men when it benefits your agenda. Your instincts, Carl, are to lie, cheat, and steal your way to the top. But when it's time to pay the piper and fess up to your crimes, you do the Republican thing, Carl, and you cut and run. Your talking points in this issue are dead and buried. Have you not read the papers? Have you not seen the poll numbers the American people have bestowed upon your glorious administration, Carl? Does this not tell you, Carl, that no one believes a single word coming out of your mouth? You see, Carl, all of your lies have been exposed. Everyone, except for those that I call the Fine 29, everyone has learned that you and your whole gang are nothing but a bunch of lying bastards, and it's in front of the entire world to see. You can preach in front of your choir over in Fort Lauderdale all you want to about people cutting and running. But you boys don't have the courage to even look in the mirror. So now what do the Republicans do that they're in some serious, and I do mean serious, trouble? They head for the lowest common denominator. They get out the old Lee Atwater playbook and let the smears begin. They look up the chapter on how to smear one of their own, one John McCain, and how well that worked. They look up the chapter on how they smeared Al Gore and try and make him look like a nut because he said he invented the Internet when he never said any such thing. And yet they open up the chapter of the Republican playbook that tells about when their minister of propaganda, the much-admired drug junkie Limbaugh, called Chelsea Clinton the White House dog, and how about when former First Lady Babs Bush called her predecessor a bitch. But then they remember what works for them best of all, and that's to call the other side cowards when they say anything against the way you started and prosecuted a war. Call them cowards. Call them traitors. Call them un-American. That's what you do, Carl. Head for the slime bucket. It served you so well in the past that you need to have faith that it'll most likely serve you well again. And, Carl, when you use that "so they did not die in vain" line, I want to throw up. Because you and I and everyone except the Fine 29 know that every single one of them died in vain. And Carl, when you ask the question, who's ever going to tell the families that their losses were in vain, I'd love to just slap you silly. I'll tell you who's going to tell the families their losses were in vain. No one, Carl. No one. Decent people will allow the families to believe what they want to, what they need to believe, to get them through their terrible sorrow. But Carl, their losses were even worse than in vain. They died for a cause that's helped no one. The world is less safe than before the Bush War. It's less humane than before the this cause that they died for. It's taken our nation down a path I hate to even think about it. Hate to even think of it. So, Mr. Rove, all your bravery and bravado, when you get up and talk to a crowd about cutting and running and they stand up and clap and cheer when you say that, you're standing in front of a group of morons. Anybody that gets up and claps and cheers to that, I can't tell you my contempt for that. It would be like someone standing up and telling me that John McCain didn't have any courage. He's a Republican. And I don't like a lot of things he does politically. But I cannot and will not ever, ever diminish that man's military record. But you think nothing of doing it, do you? It's a game. It's just a game. Hold on to power at any cost. It may be your game, but it's not mine. It's not the game of any decent people on this earth. So you go to the likes of Broward County, Florida, or wherever it may be that you want to go, and you stand. First of all, the idea that the Broward County Republicans would even have you, Karl Rove, come over and talk to me tells me a whole lot about their character. A whole lot about their character. Whoever would want a man like Karl Rove to come speak to him must be a little short on the character issue themselves. I'm going to pause for a break right now. Hope you'll stick with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is Noam Chomsky. Strong evidence suggests that the Bush administration launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured. Targeted civilians and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided to Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
And we're back, and thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. A whole plethora of subjects to talk about today. I'd love to hear from you, 866-546-5254. There's no reason why I should do all the talking. 866-546-5254. I could sit here like Limbaugh does and say, well, I'll do all the talking because I'm just a whole hell of a lot smarter than the rest of you, and I know everything and you don't. That's why you need to listen to me. Hey, I learn things from you as well. So I love to have you call the program, and you're welcome to. 866-546-5254. If you're in a Washington, D.C. bureau, and we will be in the Washington, D.C. bureau come Monday, 202-370-6153. Won't cost you a single penny to call us, Neil. Forward the call from our Washington, D.C. bureau right here into the Southwest studio, Southwest Florida studio. I didn't want to talk about this today, but I feel that I have to. And believe me when I tell you, I really, really don't want to talk about this. And I don't think a lot of people like to hear about it. But I also think it's something that has to stay in front of the American public every single day until it's settled, until the matter's settled. I know some of you visit the Aldernet website. They had a story on there that I want to talk about a little bit. It's a text, an excerpt from Peter Laufer's new book, Mission Rejected, U.S. Soldiers Who Say No to Iraq, published by Chelsea Green, 2006. A man named Joshua Key that he interviewed has told this story, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about this story, a little bit of his story. He's not an enlightened man with education, which you can tell, but he's an honorable man, which you'll also be able to tell. He said, we was going along the Euphrates River. 27-year-old former U.S. soldier from Oklahoma detailing a recurring nightmare, a scene he stumbled on shortly after the U.S. invasion of Iraq in March 2003. It's a road right in the city of Ramadi. We turned a real sharp right, and all I seen was decapitated bodies. The heads laying over here, and the bodies over here, and the U.S. troops in between them. I'm thinking, oh my God, what in the hell happened here? What caused this? Why in the hell did this happen? We got to get out, and somebody was screaming, we lost it here. I'm thinking, oh yes, somebody definitely lost it here. Joshua says he was ordered to look around for evidence of a firefight, for something to rationalize the beheaded Iraqis. I looked around just for a few seconds, and I don't see anything. But then he noticed the sight that now triggers his nightmare. I see two soldiers kicking the heads around like a soccer ball. I just shut my mouth, walk back, got inside the tank, shut the door, and it was like, I can't be no part of this. This is crazy. I came here to fight and be prepared for war, but this is outrageous. Why did this happen? That's just my question. Why did that happen? He's convinced there was no firefight that led to that beheading orgy. There were no spent shells to indicate a battle. Said, so I'm thinking they just did that because they wanted to do it. They got trigger happy and they did it. That's what made me mad in Iraq. You can take human lives at a fast rate, and all you have to say is, oh, I thought they threw a grenade. I thought I seen this. I thought I seen that. You could mow down 20 people each time, and nobody's going to ask you, are you sure? They're going to give you a high five and tell you that was doing a great job. He says he can't get the scene out of his head. He has defected to Canada. He wanted to stay out of the military. He couldn't stand it anymore. He's having nightmares, and he went to Canada to stay away from the United States military. He went on to say, when we first got to Kuwait, we were rationed to 2 bottles of water a day and 1 MRE. Those are the meals ready to eat. In the middle of the desert, you're supposed to have 6 bottles of water a day and 3 MREs, and they tell us they don't have it. I'm thinking, how the hell can the most powerful nation, the most powerful military in the world, be in the middle of a damn desert, and they don't even have no food to feed us? Oh, my. Well, this story goes on for quite a long time. And we're hearing more of these stories all the time. And I don't talk about this to cut down our military. Not at all. You know that. I support our military. I'm not a pacifist. I think there are times when we need the military. This wasn't one of them, though. And our young men and women have been put in a position that no human being should be put in. They're in a land totally unfamiliar to them, terrain totally unfamiliar to them, to being around people with different customs that are not familiar to Americans. And American customs not familiar to those people. It's a recipe for disaster. I think most of us that thought about that situation ahead of time knew it would be a recipe for disaster, and we warned that it would be. But no one listened. No one listened. Everybody on the other side that was thirsting for the blood of the enemy, and they were. Make no mistake about that, the PNAC group, thirsting. They pushed ahead, called everyone who disagreed with them un-American. Traitors. You know all the names. Let me play you a little clip I ran across. This is from Colbert. And he's interviewing one of our good PNAC friends that pushed for that war, Mr. Bill Kristol. I'm not sure Kristol knew what he was getting into when he went on Stephen Colbert's program. I'm not sure he knew. I think maybe he thought he was going to get some FaceTime on TV, and that was all. But he got much more than he bargained for. Far more than he bargained for. But this is one of the guys right here. This is one of the founders of the PNAC group, one of the men that decided and pushed for the war in Iraq. And let's just listen to what he has to say.
Exactly. Speaking of thinking alike, you were a member or are a member of the Project for the New American Century, correct?
I am.
Were or am? Am?
We're in.
Okay, how's that project coming?
Well, it's...
How's the New American Century? Looks good to me? Right?
I think it... I'm speechless.
Really?
Yeah, we've sort of...
Come on, it's a fantastic New American Century, right?
Well, I think
we're
doing okay.
You, Rummy, Wolfowitz, Cheney, Pearl, Fife, all you guys, right?
Well, we fought back after 9/11, and I'm proud of what we've done in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Yes.
But this is pre-9/11. You guys had the Project for the New American Century in the 90s.
And we thought we should have been fighting back more in the 90s.
Right, we should have invaded Iraq, you know, then, you said.
We should have, actually.
Exactly.
If we had finished the job in 1991, it would have been a lot easier.
A lot of people are bailing on this whole Iraq war idea, but you're not, right? You're
correct.
Still on board.
It's a grand experiment. No, it's not a grand experiment.
It's a little experiment?
No, it's an unfortunate necessity that you cannot allow dictators to kill their own people, and you cannot allow dictators to threaten their neighbors.
Which dictator do we take down next?
Well, I wish we could take down more, actually. You know, it'd be nice to...
Wait a second. We cannot allow dictators to kill their own people.
Well,
that's a very simple statement, sir, which I support wholeheartedly.
Back it up. I'm with you.
Who do we go after next? Iran? Come on.
I think we may have to take
Let's get some boots
again.
On the ground, sir.
I wish we may have to do that.
Is the military option on the table in Iran? Is the military option?
Absolutely. And in Sudan.
Okay. How about the nuclear option in Iran?
No, no.
Come on.
No, I differ with you. You're a tougher guy than I am.
I'm a neocon.
You're right.
You guys are tough enough for me.
I'm an anti-nuke neocon, and you're a pro-nuke neocon.
Look, I think the best possible way to show Iran that nuclear weapons are not what they want is to give them one. Come on. I think that would send the message in a very clear way, don't you?
Yeah, you must be a Democratic foreign policy advisor. That's a good idea.
Why not?
Absolutely, no. Look, Iran is a real threat. Mm-hmm. Bush has basically tried to do the right thing.
Right.
We didn't execute Iraq as well as we should have, but it was the right thing to do, and we're going to prevail.
Okay.
And we will. Iraq will be better off, and the Middle East will be better off.
Sir, you are preaching to the choir.
I do believe that.
Now, but you have criticized...
It's the best people to preach to.
The choir? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But don't turn your back on the congregation, or they might, stick with a shiv. Which is what people are doing to the president now. Why are people turning on the president? All these midterm congressional guys trying to distance themselves...
Maybe you're not aware of that.
His numbers
are not too good in the polls.
Well, he isn't paying attention to polls.
Good point.
Who pays attention to polls?
No one in Washington does, really. You know?
I did say that you called the administration incompetent. I thought you supported our president.
I do. Sometimes. It's always good to be on the Upper West Side, you know,
right.
With all the Bush supporters.
Well, no, I grew up here. These people are applauding the president. That's my audience.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
You got to read between here, the hoots, my friend.
I grew up here among all the Bush supporters.
Now, but come on. Do you support the president?
I do support the president.
That's a funny way of showing it. That's like saying, honey, I hit you because I love you. Now, why...
Well, sometimes, what can you say, right? You know, true is true.
But in what way, you have just made some friends on the Upper West Side.
To say nothing of my wife.
Exactly.
Whom I don't hit, right?
What has been incompetent? I mean, they've done what they said they were going to do.
The execution of the war, especially after April 9, 2003, was incompetent. Rumsfeld should have put more troops in. Some of us said it at the time.
Wait a second. Rumsfeld's part of the project for the new American century.
No. He signed one or two of our letters, but the president should have replaced him.
He just signed one or two of the letters, but that doesn't make him part of your group. I don't know that guy. Yeah. I just have my name next to him on a piece of paper.
I know him. I'm happy he signed our letters.
It's like ratting out the president, brother.
But the president should have removed him a year and a half ago, in truth.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, there you have it. you talk about getting beat up. I'll bet you Bill Kristol has nightmares about that. There's a little bit of a long clip there, but there was even more to it. I don't think I've seen an interview anybody done where a guy, I think he walked into a situation he had no idea about. That's one of those deals that probably one of his assistants said, you're scheduled to be on the Stephen Colbert show. He walks into the studio and gets smacked right in the face with this interrogation by Colbert. With Colbert's quick wit, I wouldn't want to walk in there and have him start in on me. I don't know about you, but I think he pretty much do the job on anybody, and he certainly did the job on Bill Kristol right there. But, you can't defend it. Here he has the PNAC group, and, would he go after Iran? You betcha. You betcha. These guys are wanting to go after Iran right now. And where will it end with these people? Where will it end? People like Bill Kristol, I don't know. We need to find them a little island someplace and send them over to it. And, you know, it's these militarists, these Republican militarists that just slay me. Here we have this PNAC group, obviously a bunch of militaristic guys. Hardly any of them served in the military. But we got these guys who pretended all along, and you've heard this story. Look how long you've heard this story about how the Republicans love the military, and the Democrats are for a weak defense. The Democrats don't believe in defense. These Republicans, they've pretended to love the military more than anything, and here they have turned vicious on some of the finest military minds that the nation's had in a good many years. All of a sudden, these generals and these admirals who disagree with Bush's war and how it's been fought are seen as a bunch of fanatics. These, the military guys, that while they were in the military before they retired, they had greatness. They were all on a pedestal. But the moment they got out and spilled their guts about what they thought about this war, well, then they're fanatics. Imagine that. Republicans, these neocon Republicans calling former generals and admirals fanatics. You talk about your pot and your kettle. Oh, man. And even though some of them haven't said it in so many words, the sentiment is no more wars for Israel. And that's really going to get them tarred and feathered by the Republicans. How about Marine General Anthony Zinni? They had the gall to call him an anti-Semite for saying that the neocons who were pro-Israel pushed the war 24/7 until they got what they wanted. It's the absolute truth. Every single word of it. This was no secret in Washington. Hell, Zinni formerly commanded the U.S. forces protecting Israel in the Middle East. Who would know the situation any better than him? Wolfowitz? Pearl? Highly doubtful. In fact, it's ridiculous. Lieutenant General Newbold, former director of operations for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the Iraq War was unnecessary, and he made reference to zealots. And he, too, was tarred and feathered as being anti-Semite. Newbold quit the service 4 months before the Bush invasion of Iraq because he stood on principle, which evidently not nearly enough military brass were willing to do, and the Republicans know that. They know that Newbold is speaking his own mind and also the thoughts of many who are still in leadership positions in the military. That is what's scaring them. The best and most appropriate quote I have yet heard came from General Newbold. He said, and I quote, The commitment of our forces to this fight was done with a casualness and swagger that are the special province of those who have never had to execute these missions or bury the result. That statement didn't get him any love from the neocons, believe me. But the nasty attack, really nastiest attack of all against General Newbold, came from Rumsfeld's crony, Stephen Herberts. Now, Herberts is a former executive of the Seagram's Booze Company, and Herberts wrote in the Washington Times, you know, the Mooney newspaper that's admired so much by the Republicans, owned and operated by Reverend Moon, the very same Reverend Moon that was invited into the United States Capitol by a group of these Republicans where they gave him a crowning ceremony that nobody wants to talk about. You know about that? If you don't, we'll talk about it on a future program. Oh, yes, a bunch of America's finest politicians attend a ceremony in the United States Capitol building putting a crown on the head of the likes of Reverend Moon. In the United States Capitol building. And when they found out that the press heard about it, oh, I wasn't there. Or, I didn't know what it was. I shouldn't get into that today. That's a whole nother ball game right there. So, anyway, this Herberts wrote in the Washington Times that it's time for the media, to start to investigate military leaders who dared to take on the administration. Where is it that we're living nowadays? I don't think I recognize this country anymore. Investigate military leaders who dared to take on the administration? Herbert said, and I quote, "It would be a service to this country when the media digs a bit below these attacks to examine the generals." Examine the generals for their opposition to Bush's handling of the war? Is this the new neocon way? Attack the military? Why do the neocons and the Republicans hate the military? Why do the neocons hate America? Huh? You know, David Broder here, not long ago, David Broder, a very distinguished writer for the Washington Post. I don't care what your politics are. David Broder goes both ways politically. But he wrote about how Representative Jack Murtha, who, by the way, happens to be a former Marine colonel, who served in Vietnam and retired after 37 years in the military, Broder wrote about how Murtha called for U.S. to get the hell out of Iraq. And Broder said he received a call, a private call, from a Pentagon officer. The officer told Broder his name, and Broder knows who he was, but he told him this was a private call. And this officer told him that Murtha speaks for many of us. Damning words toward Bush's military plans, don't you think? Murtha's been a guy who supported the military come hell or high water, but this time he saw enough malfeasance by the Defense Department to say that we needed to get the hell out of Iraq. And this fruitcake, Tony Blankley, who writes for the Washington Times, and once again, I do want to remind you, that's the Reverend Moon Washington Times, Tony Blankley said generals still in the service who may be planning to quit together in protest against Bush's policy may be illegally conspiring. Oh, a conspiracy by our military men. Scary word, don't you think? When the neocons start throwing around words like conspiracy. Sounds like firing squad stuff, doesn't it? Blankley, who you've all seen on TV far too much, is a neocon fool of the highest order, but that didn't stop him from continuing to smear the military leaders who spoke out. He actually called for a court of inquiry to determine whether the military leaders are guilty of insubordination. Blankley must have lost his mind. But he's on all the talk shows all the time, getting his 2 cents worth in. And true to form, another neocon nutcase, and I do mean nutcase, Charles Krauthammer, who is a psychiatrist by trade, by the way. Did you know that? You all thought he was some sort of a, or most of you, or some of you anyway, thought that Krauthammer was some sort of a military genius or Wall Street maven or something like that. No, he's a psychiatrist by trade, not a military man. He wrote a column in the Washington Post called The General's Dangerous Whispers. Folks, these are dangerous times, and we're being led by some extremely dangerous people. And it's time to put an end to it. So much for the Republicans and their love of the military. Once again, they love only what benefits their agenda. The rest of you can all go to hell as far as they're concerned. We love the military, all except for any of them who don't believe the same thing we believe. Oh, we love them, all right. Hey, we're going to stop for a break right now. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Finally, Ann Wright, I resigned from the State Department in protest over the war in Iraq the day the war began. I had served in the State Department for 16 years and for 29 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserves. The war in Iraq was a war of choice, not a necessity for our national defense. The Bush administration now bombs countries rather than speaking to them. We in the Congress were lied to, and we need an investigation of those lies. Please ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney for the lies they have told and the dangerous situation they have placed our country in.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
And we're back. Always good to plug our good friends on the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid, Cup of Joe, Ben Bruce Birch, and the Fourth Estate programs. And I think Bruce is going to join us in Washington as well, so looking forward to that. Hey, let's go to the phones. Let's see who we got here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Mike from San Jose. How you doing?
Great, Mike.
Listen, you tossed out Tony Blankley, and I couldn't let that go by without bringing up what will probably go down in history as his greatest hit, and that is being part of the exchange with Chris Matthews on whether or not Bush can regain his sunny nobility. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got the Media Matters transcript of it up on the screen, and what Matthews actually said was, you know, Tony, there is in the past, it's not always there, but sometimes it glimmers with this man, our president, that kind of sunny nobility. How does he bring it back? Because it hasn't been apparent for a while now. And Blankley said, well, he's had a very, very hard last 3 months, and he's had a pretty difficult administration because of all the, well, the way it is. But I think that if he's straightforward with himself first, I can't read this guy, if he's straightforward with himself first and then with the public, he can get back to an agenda and start moving forward. But if he gets locked into defending the indefensible, then it's just going to get go from bad to very worse. I mean, is that lucid thinking or
locked into defending the indefensible?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new thing he just started, and he better quit before it becomes a habit, you know?
Yeah, and even Blankley knows it's indefensible. Oh, man, that's a beaut. That's a beaut.
You know, the interesting thing, we've talked about this one before, too, is what's going on with Scarborough right now, because they've got a clip up on Ross' story of him basically saying everybody knows Bush is pandering on gay marriage. And the reason he said it is in the interview, he just kind of got cornered and asked that question and got a bit of the deer in the headlights thing and said, well, yeah, he's pandering and he knows it and the base knows it. But I wonder if Scarborough will ever try to make that journey back to the dark side. You know,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe he will. He's you know, it's like my friend and I were talking about recently. There's a lot of people jumping off the neocon boat right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not jumping on the side of the left. They're waiting right on the dock for another neocon boat to come by.
Yeah.
That's what it is. They're too far gone, most of them are. I mean, the ones that are over there solidly, they're going to stay over there for now and forevermore. We're just going to have to go after the independents and the, you know, some of the other people who can think straight.
I wonder what the chances are between. I mean, yeah, people keep wanting to talk about November 2008, and given everything that's happened up to this point, I think it's just too far in advance to really be thinking about it. I mean, you can say Hillary versus McCain if you want, but who knows what could happen between now and then. But I'm just wondering if there is, you know, you talked before when I called about, you know, keep an eye on Joe Biden because he really wants to be president. But I'm wondering if there's a neocon out there, given the fact that during the 2004 election, Rove expressed interest in running a Frist campaign, and I think that ship has sailed. I don't see that happening.
No.
Half the Republicans hate McCain's guts. I mean, that's non-scientific poll numbers, but, I mean, he's not their poster child by any
nope.
means. And I don't think we're going to see St. Rudy ascend to you know, the kingship. So who's left? Who really do you think they're going to put out there in 2008? Or someone we haven't even seen yet?
I think it's Mitt Romney.
Yeah?
I
well,
do.
You said that before. That's right. And that is a good – I mean, if I were a betting man, you got that.
Yeah, you know, he's you know, what can you say about the war? You can't say much about Romney because hardly any of the public knows where he stands on it. They don't know. That's why I think it's dangerous for a United States senator to run for the presidency.
Right.
Everybody, I mean, everything they've voted on, you know, everything they've said is right there on the record for everybody to see. And a guy like Romney from a, you know, a governorship, he might just be able to sneak in there. I don't know. But I'd bet on him right now. If I was at the track and you made me put down a bet, that's where my money'd go.
Well, you know, the thing about Romney, too, is that as far as his presence out in front of the media and everything, he's got a little bit of what Tony Snow's got, which even though Snow came from Fox, and even though you can go on Media Matters and spend the rest of the day reading all of the inconsistencies in his reporting, and you know, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, Tony Snow can get out there in front of the cameras and do the aw shucks thing.
Oh.
And when he got out there and he, you know, kind of the tears welled up over his illness, which, I mean, I'm not making light of that or whatever, but, I mean, he won over the room that day. And McClellan, it got to the point where he was just so belligerent and so, you know, in combat mode all the time and so defensive, and he just had the look that people got sick of him. So, I mean, McCain's got baggage, Giuliani's got baggage, Frist has baggage, and we don't really know that much about Romney's baggage. So if he gets out there and he smiles and he waves the flag, you know, who knows?
If the Republicans should put Giuliani up as their candidate, that would be, I believe, the greatest example of hypocrisy that's ever happened on this planet. I don't think there's any way. I mean, with his marital history, with his stance on pro-choice, if they put him up, I give up. I'd be shocked.
If they want to squeeze the last ounce of blood out of the 9/11 turnip, then maybe they do it. I mean, this morning on MSNBC, they were talking about this thing in Canada. And I swear, Guy, I wish I had an exact quote of what this talking head said. But he said basically something about, you know, Canada, known all through history as a country that opened its doors to everyone and was a welcoming place or whatever, now has to accept the cold reality that they, too, must deal in the war on terror. You know, I mean, these are guys who were born in Canada. You know, play up the fact they go to a mosque and that one of these guys was like a real hard charger, you know, speaking in the mosque and everything. And, you know, it's more Arabs. And so, oh, boy, clang the bell. But, I mean, these are Canadians who pulled a stunt, who, you know, it was a copycat crime, basically. It was a bunch of idiots from Canada who wanted to have the thrill of being Al-Qaeda for 5 minutes, and it was like Mo, Larry, and Curly, and they got caught, and they're going to go to jail. But all of a sudden, the nation of Canada is plunged into the never-ending war on terror, and they're just like us.
Oh, yeah, and let's see now. Did these guys born in Canada, did they hate Canada because they're free? I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm just saying. I
sense the fact that Canada's resolve is firm and they'll never waver.
Yeah, and you know, and it's a good thing we're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them here. I don't know.
Hey, guy, one more thing before I go.
Yeah.
Seriously, how many? Assume we get a decent president, if that's possible, in 2008. Okay, assume we put an end, you know, Lynn Cheney and her comments about if you really want a Bush dynasty, then you have to elect Laura Bush and all this garbage and Jebby and wife-beater George Prescott Bush there with his power to the people salute and driving back and forth over the girlfriend's lawn in his SUV. Forget the whole Bush family. Assume we get a decent president in 2008. How many 4-year administrations do you think we would need to go through to get back on track and be where we were when Clinton left office, as far as the economy, as far as maybe not so many people hating us, just where it felt like America again? You're thinking like 1 4-year term, two,
no.
Three, or can it even be done?
Two or three, if at all. Two or three,
yeah.
If at all. Because we've
so that
got...
means that whoever gets in there, that they've got to actually do something that will resonate.
And like I said, and we got the news coming up here. As I said, it'd be akin to the captain of the Titanic after they hit the iceberg, turning it over to the assistant captain and say, here you go, pal. We may be looking at something like that. Hey, thanks for your call.
You bet, guy. Take care. Bye.
Yeah. Hey, you are listening to the Guy James Show. All of you that are on the phone, hang on till after the news at the top of the hour. We'll be getting to that in just a moment or two. And we'll have our guests coming up in the second hour as well. So don't go where. Stay right there.
This is Quality News Network. A new study shows that members of the Congress and their aides took free trips, 23,000 of them worth nearly $50 million, paid for by corporations, trade associations, and other private groups between January of 2000 and June of last year. The study was conducted by the Center for Public Integrity, American Public Media, and Northwestern University's Medill News Service. While some excursions were legitimate fact-finding missions, the study says others appear to have been little more than pricey vacations wrapped around speeches or seminars in which the lawmaker was joined by family members. The U.S. Supreme Court says it will hear two cases this fall that will decide whether public school districts can use race as a tiebreaker when considering whether students get into the high schools of their choice. In Iraq, gunmen wearing police uniforms raided bus stations in central Baghdad today, kidnapping at least 50 people, including drivers and passengers preparing to travel outside Iraq. The victims were driven off in more than a dozen vehicles. Their fate is unknown. Today's abduction follows yesterday's murders of 21 Shiites who were taken off two minivans north of Baghdad by masked gunmen and shot to death. In another attack, police hunting for militants stormed a Sunni Arab mosque just hours after a car bombing. The ensuing firefight killed 9. An Israeli missile strike on a car in the northern Gaza Strip today killed 1 Palestinian militant and wounded 4 others. Israel says the militant had been involved in firing makeshift rockets at Israel. And in an unrelated incident, dozens of gunmen stormed into Palestine television today in a show of strength against President Mahmoud Abbas in the final hours before his deadline to Hamas to accept the manifesto implicitly recognizing Israel, or he will call for a referendum. The gunmen, whom employees identified as local Hamas members, fired into equipment, smashed computers, beat up several workers. Hamas denies any responsibility. The U.S. Senate today begins debate on a constitutional amendment backed by President Bush to ban same-sex marriage, but it is not expected to have the 67 votes it needs for passage. While the president's approval ratings range between 30% and 34% nationally, his ratings in California have plummeted to just 28%. That's the lowest of any sitting president except for Richard Nixon, whose approval ratings fell to 24% just before his resignation. The first contingent of National Guard troops, 55 from Utah, now on the U.S.-Mexican border to help in the president's program to support the Border Patrol. And in Peru, former President Alan Garcia has staged a remarkable political comeback in that country's runoff election, beating a retired Army lieutenant to regain control of the country. It's 2:30 past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The service sector of the U.S. economy expanded in May, but at a slower pace than in April. Rising fuel prices are considered to be a factor. The Supreme Court today limited the use of civil anti-racketeering laws by companies wanting damages for allegedly illegal acts by their competitors. The airline industry is expected to lose about $3 billion this year. That's slightly less than in 2005. But industry lobby group IATA says that a significant rise in the price of oil has almost totally offset stronger revenue growth and efficiency gains. Meanwhile, a Goldman Sachs senior executive says that the investment bank's earlier projection that oil prices could top $100 a barrel in the event of a major supply disruption may be too low. Optimistic results from studies involving Sutin, that's an anti-cancer drug from Pfizer that's been on the market just a few months. Studies show that Sutin shrank or stabilized kidney tumors in 31% of patients who participated in a late-stage clinical trial that was funded by the drug company. And Vonage Holdings, a target of a class action lawsuit that claims the internet phone company improperly steered customers toward investing in its $531 million initial public offering. Shares of the internet phone startup have plunged more than 30% since the much-anticipated IPO on May 24th. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.15 a barrel. The Dow Industrials are down 105 points. NASDAQ is off 25, and the S&P 500 is down 9. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. We're back with the Guy James Show, trying desperately to get a hold of our guest. I don't know where that situation is right now. We're trying to get a hold of our guest even as we speak right here. We're waiting on him. I don't know what's the matter with our communications here. Are we going to have our guest on? Yes. All right, we've been stood up, folks. Thank you very much. Nothing like calling the party people, I always say. Nothing like the DNC or your state Democratic parties and so forth. They say they're going to call back. We had an appointment to have them on today at 4:05. We called, and, of course, they're away from the desk. That's the way you get treated from the state parties and the DNC, just in case you wondered. Pretty much worthless organizations, both. And, well, I'm not going to kiss up to them. Why should I? I've told you what I feel like about Mr. Blackwell. And let's just talk about this. We were going to talk about this Brian Rothenberg, communications director, who just stood us up on the program. And it says, as if his infamous voter suppression antics of 2004 weren't enough, Longline Ken Blackwell proposed, they call him Longline because of having to stack voters up the way he did, and without enough voting machines in Ohio to throw the election to Bush. He had proposed rules Monday that significantly restrict proactive efforts to the Ohio voters. at 11 a.m., at an 11 a.m. hearing in a ground floor hearing room with the Rhodes State Office Tower, Blackwell's representatives heard from lawyers, including the Ohio Democratic Party, who are trying to prevent yet another gimmicky rule change to make it harder for Ohioans to register and vote. So here we go. We've got Blackwell trying his magic once again. This time he's going to try and get everybody who takes voter registration to have to deliver them practically to him personally from all over the state. So really a great situation there in Ohio. I guess politics don't get any dirtier than they are in Ohio right now. On the Republican side, Blackwell has done, well, all he can in the last election, and now here he is doing it again. And, well, anyway. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, this is Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Jim.
I just wanted to surface a couple issues, if I may, please.
Yes.
Please turn
down your speakers. We get the feedback in, and everybody, it sounds terrible to everybody else.
Oh, boy, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to call you back, Guy.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're having one of those times on the show where anything that can go wrong is going wrong. Anyway, hey, let's move on. We've heard the tragedy of the CBS crew last week, getting two of them killed and one of them hurt so terribly. And perhaps there's something that I'm missing here. Right-wing extremists say that the journalist in Iraq failed to report the good news because they're afraid to go out and find it. And you all heard, who was it, that crazy woman, Laura Ingraham. She all said that they all stand on their hotel back in balconies and get the news. And because they're so afraid, they remain in an area where all the bad things are happening. Is that what they're saying? I mean, they're reporting what they're seeing, and the Republicans are accusing them of not having the courage to go out and collect stories. So they're reporting what they see, and they're in the green zone, and in safe places, so-called in Iraq. And this is what they're seeing? You know, is that what the Republicans are saying? What I'm hearing is that out of fear, the U.S. journalists over there are refusing to go out among the sunshine and rainbows and happy dancing Iraqis in favor of remaining in a place where journalists have a very good chance of getting killed while doing their jobs. Either right-wing news is dumber than I thought, or I'm really missing something. I don't know which it is. I really don't know which it is. I must be missing something, because when I listen to Hannity and Limbaugh and Coulter and O'Reilly and Ingraham and the rest of the right wing preaching to the choir whores, they're harping louder and longer each day that the media isn't reporting the good news in Iraq because they're afraid to leave the green zone or their hotel balconies, as one of them put it. So if they're too chicken to go out and report their green zone sanctuary, you know, from their green zone sanctuary or the hotel balconies, there must be a hell of a lot of really bad things happening right there where they're at. Think about it. If they're only reporting from the limited scope the screaming right-wingers say they are, then things must be pretty damn bad. So if they're only reporting the bad news from where they're holed up, then they should be told that out beyond the walls they cower behind is a land of milk and honey and rainbows and perpetual sunshine and human kindness. The journalist reporters and their crews are getting killed in record numbers, so someone needs to tell them to get out amongst the people where it's safe. Can these right-wing so-called media people be any dumber? Or, you know, maybe the better question is, could their audiences be any dumber? I'll leave the answer up to you to decide that one. Let's see. What are we going to do here? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, it's Jim again. I apologize to
yes.
the speakers. Listen, in reference to the invasion of Iraq, I don't think of anything that could probably parallel it in history unless it would be the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union. And you know, when they first invaded Russia, they were greeted with bread and salt. And, you know, if they had treated those people halfway decently, they could have won their hearts and minds. But you see what happened to them, and you see where that war ended up.
Oh, yeah.
Actually.
Yep.
And that's just a lesson in history. And the second thing is this business about the gay marriage amendment. And they're bringing this thing out of the closet again. And they're doing it only for one reason and one reason only, and that is to divert us from the real attentions that need to be from attentions that need to be focused upon our problems at home and all kinds of other just dirty tricks. And it's just unimaginable as far as I'm concerned, you know?
I know. It is. It's, you know, the old three-card Monty game, the shell game, whatever you want to call it.
And one other thing I would like to mention. On 19 June, there will be 50 federal agencies involving 4,000 people who will be taken from their homes and relocated to undisclosed locations on a readiness exercise drill in preparation for a nuclear attack or some type of other cataclysmic event.
Wow.
So they're going to be doing that. But the trouble is, normally, and I know from personal experience, when they have drills like this, they don't make them everyone's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. This stuff is handled in the most sensitive manner, okay? But apparently what appears to me is they're attempting to weave into the tapestry of fear that they've already pretty much tried to throw over the entire country another element into this thing, into you better stay with us so they can, at any cost, keep their fingers and hands on the levers of power.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. Hey, thanks for your call, Jim. Good to hear from you. Well, let's see. What do we got on the old schedule right now? Hey, you know, you hear these great speeches. Politicians make great speeches. Here's some great speeches, and then listen what's at the end of it. Now, I'll tell you what, we're having one of those times, all right? What happened to the great speeches? Here we go.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I shall not see, and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Are you having burritos for lunch?
Well, that's just how it is in the Bush administration, isn't it? Now, hey, we're gonna pause for a song or so, and we'll be back in just a second. Don't go away.
Justice, dead or alive.
that aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda. I know I didn't say that there was a direct connection between September the 11th and Saddam Hussein. War is my last choice. We're going to smoke them out. Bring them on. We think Patriot Act constitutional guarantees are in place. The wiretap requires a court order.
Saddam Hussein's got weapons of mass destruction.
Although we have not found stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, and it is true that much of the intelligence turned out to be wrong, no one can now doubt the word of America.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities and you will be held accountable.
Why, you ill-mannered sack of crap!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do you mind if I blow off steam? You don't, do you? You're always pretty good about listening about when I have a gripe about something. I spend a lot of time on this program trying to get ready, and it may not sound like it some days, especially today right after 4 o'clock when we had a guest scheduled and just one of those things that anything that could go wrong did go wrong. I've got a pet peeve with the Democratic Party, and I wonder if any of you agree. And there are probably people, some people that listen to this program hate me for saying this, because you know how I have leveled criticism at the national party and the state level party. It's the local parties that do the good. The state party and the national party at times are worthless. I saw this story, this press release right away this morning about this Ken Blackwell story and his new dirty tricks that he's trying to do. And being a good, honest Democrat and want to do what I can to help things along in my very small way here, we're not at the top of the charts or anything like that. I know who we are and what we do. I fully understand that. But we're trying to get a hold of the Ohio Democratic Party. And so we went to their website and started down the list of phone numbers and called the chairman, the assistant chairman, the communications director, the assistant communication, called everybody. The operations director called every single phone number on their site. Everyone. And not one of them answered the phone. Not a single one. Finally, I left a message. And by the way, I also fired off emails. No response. So, finally, I left a message at one of the assistants that said, if this is an emergency, here's my cell phone number. And so I called, and this gal was very, very nice and called me back. And she was very pleasant and nice to talk to, and said that she would set up this interview if she could. And so she called me back very dutifully, just like she said she would, and said she had it all set up. And, of course, the time comes for it. And you call during the break. This is what we do while the news is on. If we got a guest coming up right after the top of the hour, we call the guest during that time, and they wait on hold for about a minute or so. And we make sure that we've got everything set to go so it'll sound nice and smooth and all, and off we go. Well, you call the Ohio Democratic Party and says, oh, he's not here. He's not here. Let me send you to his voicemail. No. I don't want the voicemail. I need to talk to him. Well, he's not here. I'll ring his desk, but you will see he's not here. So sure enough, she rings his number, and he's not there, and the machine picks it up. So I call back. I get cut off. So I call back, and by then it's getting down to the news is just about over, and it's getting, you know, desperate time in order not to sound like a geek here on the show. And I call back, and she says, oh, I don't know what happened. Let me try and call him back. And so she called him back, and I get the answering machine, and so I hang up. I have no choice at this point. So we do talk about the Blackwell story. We didn't get to cover it in depth the way we wanted to with the communications director of the Ohio Democratic Party. And then they call later on. Not at the appointed time that we wanted, but they called later on while we were off at break with you folks during a song we played there or something, and said, oh, no, I've been here all along. I don't know what happened. Well, I might suggest that is just what the hell is wrong with the party on the state levels, maybe not every place around the country, but in a lot of places, and it's certainly what's wrong with the DNC in Washington, D.C., they don't give a damn. They really don't. You've got, and I'll just lay it out for you. You know I'm good at doing that, and I get myself in a lot of trouble for the old foot and mouth disease. And next time I call one of these people for an interview, they'll tell me to stick it, you know, the whole deal. But I don't care, because I owe you, my listeners, the truth. I don't owe them a damn thing. And they don't owe me anything, except we're out here trying to benefit the cause. But what you have in many cases, certainly not all, I would not indict everybody that's in the positions of authority around the country and the state and the national party. But what you have in many, many, many positions is some youngster fresh out of college or a couple of years out of college that got themselves immersed into the political scene, and they become part of the state party or a campaign, and all of a sudden they're God. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And let me tell you, there was nobody any better at that in the last election. And I often wonder if these people know this. And that's why I'd like to meet face-to-face with it to tell them. And I'm not indicting the candidates for it. But I'm wondering if they know about their campaign organization just what people run into sometime from my end, from the media, and how these youngsters, still wet behind the ears out of college in many cases, who have got caught up in a national or state or local political campaign, all of a sudden think they're really something. Oh, yes. And you're going to beg me, mister, if you want somebody on it. You're going to beg me. You're going to call me half a dozen times. And unless, of course, you're Wolf Blitzer or Hannity or Limbaugh or somebody, then you can get whoever you want. Because what they want is FaceTime. They want the most FaceTime or radio time that they can get for somebody. Not necessarily time, you know, they're looking for the big ratings. So that's how it works. And it even happens that, as is often the case, if you have a small or medium-sized office, program, audience, and you have an appointment with somebody for an interview at, say, 4:05 or 4:10, you better believe if CNN calls them for an interview, they're going to tell you that, I'm sorry, we've got other things to do. Maybe that's the natural thing to do. I don't know. It's not the honorable thing to do, but that's what's done, because they will always go for the higher ratings. Always. So there you have the Guy James treatise today on what is wrong with American politics on the Democratic side. And I know the Republicans are just like it. You get these young, wet behind the ears assistants and so forth that think they're really something. Oh, yes. They can call back home and tell you, yeah, I'm working in the campaign. I'm a big shot. While we're on this vein, I want to try something out with you. I'd like to ask you a question. Okay? I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and I know some of you have as well, and you may have read some of what I'd like to speak to you about in the news nowadays and on chat rooms and so forth. I'd like to ask you a question. you're all good Democrats or progressives or whatever you want to get. Suppose you own a professional baseball team, and now all the gals are saying, oh, geez, not a sports story. But stick with me here. Suppose you own a professional baseball team, and they usually win maybe half their games. And you're sick and tired of that, and you want to win the World Series. Okay? You've got limited money to spend, and you got to come up with a plan. You got, say, maybe $20 million to spend, which isn't a lot in Major League Baseball, but you got this $20 million to spend, so you decide to go out and purchase Alex Rodriguez's contract. For those of you who aren't baseball fans, he's one of the top several players in the game, no question about it. You go out and purchase Alex Rodriguez's contract for 1 year, and you spend all your money on it, if you could get him for $20 million even. And you hope and pray that Alex has a great year and that the rest of the team will kind of respond to his great play and his obvious leadership. And you know what? It works. Alex has a great year and your team wins the league and they win the World Series. Your strategy of blowing the whole bankroll to win one World Series was an absolute stroke of genius. You won your much-coveted World Series, but the following year, oh, Alex Rodriguez's contract with you is up. And being the mercenary that most baseball players are nowadays, he works on to greener, you know, he moves on to greener pastures, someone to give him more money. And your team limps along and loses half their games again. But what the hell? You did win one World Series. You're a genius. Or are you? And before I go any further, this actually happened. A guy named Wayne Huizenga in Miami, Florida, owned a team called the Florida Marlins that most of you baseball fans are aware of. And he went out and spent a wad of money on some highly paid players and won the World Series real quick. Then he sold the team off, one player after another, until he had a team that was the joke of the major leagues. Why? Because he was only interested in being a one-shot Louie, the proverbial flash in the pan, a one-hit wonder. He wanted to win so bad that he didn't care about the future. It was now or never for him, and instead of building for the future, he chose the now. And it was over for him just as quickly as it had started. But what if you had taken your money and invested it in your farm team, your good old farm system, and lots of good coaches? What if you nurtured and grew your own players in this farm system? You know, the kind of players you really want to have on your team, the kind of guys that have a great future ahead of them and are not tainted by fame and fortune as of yet. Instead of adding a room onto the house, you build a new house from the ground on up. You've succeeded in building a mighty foundation, and it takes a few years. Oh, yes, it takes a few years. It's not going to happen overnight. But your farm system is successful in feeding your major league team one good player after another until your team is so good with these homegrown players that they win the World Series. Not once, but several times. And in fact, your team becomes a dynasty. And this is a whole lot more satisfying than winning only one World Series because you had a long-range plan and didn't build a team only for the now. You build a team for the future. And your patience paid off. Now, you really are a genius. And what I'm getting at, and I know most of you see where I'm headed by now, aren't we at the same place with the Democratic Party right now? On the one hand, we've got Rahm Emanuel, who's the chairman of the Democratic Campaign Committee in the House of Representatives, and he's fighting a ferocious battle against the chairman of the DNC, Howard Dean. In my opinion, and I'd love to hear what you think, but in my opinion, Emanuel is looking for the instant gratification of a quick win, and Howard Dean is looking at the long haul. I think Dean is right, and Emanuel, in my estimation, is way off base. And you heard what the fight's about. Emanuel wants to concentrate on what he and all of his cronies see as the competitive states, the Ohio, the Florida, you know, and Dean wants to build a base in all of the states. One wants a quick fix, and the other one wants a complete overhaul. What good is it going to do the Democratic Party? And looking at the whole picture, what is it going to do America if we win this election and the 2008 election. What good is it going to do us to win those if we get booted out of office right after that and the Republicans take over again and undo everything the Democrats might have accomplished during that time? And then the party has to start all over again, back to the drawing board. How many times have we been back to the drawing board lately? I believe that we should go to the drawing board now, stay at the drawing board until we have figured out how to root the Republicans out of their traditional strongholds in every state. Rahm, I've got news for you. Many of the old-time Democratic organizations that helped build the party are gone. And if you don't believe that, where the hell are the unions nowadays? Where are the Democratic leaders in the South that help keep Democrats in office? Gone with the wind. It's a new day, Rahm. We need to build some new organizations. We've got to walk before we can run. We need to build a new foundation in the Rust Belt and in the South. And there's plenty to build on. Just because the unions have nearly disappeared from the scene doesn't mean that the working man can't be recruited back into the Democratic Party. Surely by now the average Joes realize that the Republican Party's been poisoned for them. And they'll gladly come home to the Democratic Party if they're handled right. If they're wooed and courted in the proper way. If the party works on each and every state exploiting the strengths of the party and the negatives of the Republican Party, then we can and will make a comeback. We just have to take our time and build that foundation that Governor Dean's willing to roll up his sleeves and work towards. Rahm Emanuel wants to build a house of straw for a temporary shelter, and Howard Dean wants to build a structure out of brick and mortar that the Republicans can huff and puff and blow all they want to, but they'll be unable to blow it down. Dean is right. Emanuel is wrong. Now, don't get me wrong here. Like most of you, I do feel a sense of urgency here. For how long can the nation survive with the neocons running the show? Surely not long. So we have to redouble our efforts. We have to put our sprinters out in front while our long-distance runners stay in the rear laying up the foundations of our new Democratic Party brick by brick. It's a tough task that lies ahead, but we've done it before, and we can and we will do it again. All it takes is teamwork, and Howard Dean, perhaps more than anyone in the party, realizes that individual effort is important, but in the end, it's the team that wins the victory. Rahm, you need to join hands with Howard Dean, and let's just get this job done right. Let's do it right for a change instead of going back to the drawing board every single time we have an election. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. Give us a call.
Oh boy, president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that. On the eve of destruction again, and he's got the knack. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He come into town with a chip on his shoulder. His cowboy boots made him feel tall. He said, by proclamation, now there's a new order, and I am the fiercest leader of all. Wore a pair of six shooters, a bowie knife and a rifle, and a derringer stashed in his boot. He said, y'all drop your weapons, I'm here to disarm you. Don't give me a reason to shoot. Everyone protested, they all turned against him, said, just who do you think you are? He said, many are good, but many are evil, and I am the Avatar. They all drew and fired, E.L. Condoleezza, if you're with me, then blast them to hell. She came riding side saddle, shouting out orders and twirling two pistols remarkably well. When it was over, there's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In old America, you'd never get away with that. With an ego the size of Texas and his brand on Iraq, he's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
And we're back. Thanks for being with us here at the Guy James Show today. What do we got? About 22 minutes before the hour. Kind of a quiet day around the old studio. Yes, indeed it is. Here at the Truth and Broadcasting Studio, high atop it, up on the third floor. Looking out across the Southwest Florida landscape. A beautiful day here. Sun shining. Gorgeous day. Hope it is where you are as well. I know all you folks out in Phoenix, we've heard from the Phoenix Bureau. It's a bit warm out there. Just a bit warm out there. Man, oh man, is it a bit warm out there. Having record temperatures in Phoenix these past few days. I don't know if they set a record today, but they've been on or right at records here in the past few days. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Hey, do me a favor, will you? Would you do me a favor? Would everyone listening to the program right now, no matter how you're listening to it, maybe tomorrow with an iPod or in the archives, or if you're listening live right now, would you send an email? Just take you a second. GuyJames@theGuyJamesShow.com. Let me know where you're listening from, and, you know, did you hear about the show on Democratic Underground? Did you hear about it on Democrats.com? Smirking Chimp, where did you hear about the show? Just give us a little bit of information. We're not going to turn it into the NSA. Don't worry. We wouldn't do that unless they offer us a whole bunch of money for that information, and they haven't, and they don't have enough money. You've all heard from the right-wing pundit Thomas Sowell, right? Well, today he wrote a column in our local newspaper here that sums up, in my opinion, the Republican views on the state of affairs in America just absolutely beautifully. I don't think any Republican could have represented their views any more than Thomas Sowell did today. This guy is one of the most self-righteous, egotistical son of a guns I think I've ever read. I do read his column each and every week. He's an intellectual, I think, out at Stanford University, and he's a syndicated columnist. Only thing is that Sowell's views are so far off the mark so as to be judged just plain ignorant. Sometimes these intellectuals don't have any common sense at all. And believe me, this stuffed-shirt intellectual, Soul, he doesn't think of himself as ignorant, but he is. First of all, he touts his opinion that the so-called liberal media has this unbelievable amount of clout with the American public. Would someone point this out to me? We have a liberal media network that's heard in how many cities across America, how many big markets across America, on how many big booming stations across America, this liberal media and these liberal talk shows on TV at night, these liberal shows on Sunday morning, this liberal Wall Street Journal, who else? I mean, come on. Come on. So-called liberal media. I've been searching for this powerful liberal media machine for several years now, and I haven't been able to locate it, and I've looked high and low. Oh, sure, there's a voice here and a voice there, but by and large, the liberal media belongs, not the liberal media, but the media belongs lock, stock, and barrel to the far right. And even many of them have admitted it. They've admitted it. They know it. I read where Ann Coulter at a cocktail party admitted it. I'm sorry to mention her name. I'm sorry. I apologize. So Sowell goes on to tell us what a myth it is that's being spread by the so-called liberal media that the economy is suffering. Sowell goes on to tell us that the latest stock market figures near record highs in growth, near record lows in unemployment. That all means that the economy is doing really great. Question for Mr. Sowell. Is this one of those deals that who you're going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Thomas, old boy, who are you going to believe? 100 million Americans or more who are having a hard time paying the bills without working two or three jobs? Or are you going to believe the Wall Street version? Which version has more to do with how the average guy is doing, the stock market or the price of groceries and gasoline? You know, Sowell might have a point if he aimed his article at the super rich, whom we all know are doing better than ever off the backs of the American worker. Never was that statement more true. The rich are getting rich and the poor are getting poorer. Never has it been more true. Sowell says that for decades, the liberal media has struggled against good economic news. Odd, I didn't hear very many complaints during the Clinton administration. Did you? Did you hear the liberal media, the so-called liberal media, complaining during the Clinton administration, even from the most vociferous of the Clinton haters? You know, Sowell repeats the old worn-out Republican mantra that equates microwaves and cars with the new affluence of the poor. In Sowell's world and the world of most Republicans, if you've got a car and a microwave, things must be damn good in your house. He says in his article that instead of telling the world how wonderful it is that the poor can now warm up a bowl of ketchup soup or refresh some stale breadcrumbs, the liberal media is pointing out how the bottom 20% of America's share the national income and how it's declining. Sowell tells us that most of the people in the bottom 20% are not full-time year-round workers. Why not, Mr. Sowell? Could it be that a whole lot of them can't find full-time year-round work? Come and ask the people where I live who just got canned from their jobs this year because the snowbirds didn't spend enough money in this area this year. Ask them why they're not working year-round. Sowell also tells us that regardless of what the facts are, and I got to tell you, I find this statement more than a bit humorous coming from this right-wing cheerleader. Regardless of what the facts are, he says, you can always find exceptions to those facts, and that is what the liberal media is basing their claims of a poor economy on, exceptions. Mr. Sowell, tell that to the Delphi workers. Tell it to the airline workers. Tell it to all those whose jobs have been sent out of the country. I guess those are all exceptions. And he goes on to say that a number of those living on a minimum wage has been declining. It sure has. I'll agree with that, because you can't live on a minimum wage. And besides that, most employers at the minimum wage level pay a nickel, a dime, a quarter, an hour above it, so as not to be accused of paying the minimum wage. And you've all seen that game. I've seen that game played 1,000 times by employers advertising for help saying they pay above minimum wage. Oh, boy. Sowell says the liberal media and what was the word he used? Intelligentsia are strenuously trying to preserve the vision of poverty and economic distress. One guy this guy did get right in this article is that the poor are more likely to be attracted to the left. No kidding, man. No kidding. What an astute observation. I guess he wants the poor to band together and say, let's all vote Republican because they've done so much for us and so little for themselves. I've complained to our local newspaper about printing Sowell's column. Not that they don't have a perfect right to do so, but because he's so full of crap that it offends me and makes their paper look absolutely foolish. But then, as I mentioned to you the other day, this is the same newspaper that regularly prints columns of Jonah Goldberg as well. That ought to explain some of this. Hey, let's go to the phones. You're on the Guy James Show. Hi, how you doing today?
Hey, Guy, it's Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I wanted to let you know that there's a number of people that remain on the Tom Hartman chat program and rave about the Guy James Show. You're up against Randy, and the big part of the faction goes there, but those that have come to find you do appreciate you. Alice was trying to call in earlier, and she had a good message, and it's one that I would hope that we could come up with an answer for, and that is that if a person steals an automobile and gets caught, they don't get to keep the automobile. And so, you know, the same logic applies, that if there are those who steal elections, and get caught at it. And they certainly did, I think, with at least now RFK Jr. If he either gets to keep what they steal, they'll just go on doing it. You know.
Sure. What's the penalty? There's no penalty. They haven't suffered anything for it.
I've got to think that some really good lawyers are going to be able to draft a suit. I don't think they can do it against the president, but virtually everybody else that was a part of this whole line us into war crimes. You know, I even, of course, as you know, believe that they brought about their own new Pearl Harbor to give themselves an excuse to do it, to get the people behind their effort. I believe that we are still in Iraq because it is just so damn profitable to the same PNAC group. There's some serious, serious psychopathic people that have stolen our government. You spell it out better than anybody, Guy. Most of the time, I think you hear it as close as anybody gets to it.
Well, thank you, Dave. And, you know, I agree with so much of what you say. And the problem is, you know, each party has got their elites. And the elites usually float to the top and run the parties. And the powers that be in the Democratic Party aren't the slightest bit, and I can tell you, the powers that be in the Democratic Party are not the slightest bit interested in one thing you just had to say. Not one single thing. They don't care how we got into the war. They don't care if the election was rigged. They don't care. They really don't. And you know, if people don't believe that statement, just take a look and see what they've done about it. Nothing.
Well, there's exceptions. There's some people.
That's right. And thank you for saying that. There are some exceptions. But,
you know, the Black Caucus is the most heroic of them all, I think.
They're sure.
More willing to confront it where it is. I don't know what has got the rest of them don't want Limbaugh saying bad words about them.
That's right.
And he certainly will do it if they speak out.
Oh, sure. He'll invent a little nickname for them and... was it Harry Dingy Reed or Dingy Harry calls him and some other names. He's good at coming up with little nicknames. That must really offend those people.
Well, I think you and I would be honored to have Limbaugh badmouthing us. It would be a badge of honor.
I did have Limbaugh mention me one day. He was talking about the fabulous liberal media. He was going on and on and on about the liberal media. This has been 2 or 3 years ago, and he started listing the vast amount of liberal talk shows. You know. Oh, boy. But,
well, there are a few of you that are really great now.
We've got some good people on our side. We do. And, by the way, I'm pretty sure I'm going to see Tom this coming Monday and the crew over at AAR. And we're going to go to New York. To Washington, D.C. for the Take Back America conference, and there's going to be a radio row there. So I expect to see all of our liberal progressive. Of course, most of them don't call themselves liberal. They call themselves progressives.
I'd love it if AAR were to carve out a niche for Guy James.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
We talk too much. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for your call. And
Thank you for everything.
And again, I do hope you understand. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that there are of course, exceptions. There are. But there's not nearly enough Democrats with enough guts to look people square in the eye and say, yes, if we take back the power, we will investigate these things. We will,
right.
You know, but there's just not enough of them that got
by their failure to address it, they have become a part of the problem, a very real part.
That's exactly right. Thanks for your call, Dave. I promised to update you today on the case of Carol Fisher. You remember we talked about the case of Carol Fisher a week or two ago, how she had gone to she'd put up the Bush step down posters on telephone poles in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, and she got into a scuffle with the police, little tiny woman, two big cops, and she's charged and convicted on two counts of felony assault on police officers. Well, Carol is now in the Cuyahoga County Jail. And we laid out the whole story and had an interview about the whole thing. On June 2nd, Judge Timothy McGinty sentenced her to 2 months in jail, 2 years probation with community service, and a mandatory anger management class. It's a total outrage. Her lawyer had filed an appeal. The case has been reported on extensively in the Cleveland Free Times, the Sun Press, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and on this show. So they sent me this update today on sentencing day, which was June 2nd. 9:40 a.m. as Carol and her supporters, you want to pay a close listen to this. If you think fascism isn't creeping into the country, this is how it starts. As Carol and her supporters entered the lobby of the Justice Center in Cleveland, they were surrounded by deputies who claimed that anyone wearing a political T-shirt was not allowed in the building, including Carol. Luckily, her attorney, Terry Gilbert, happened to arrive on the scene at that moment. Mr. Gilbert demanded to see the written policy against wearing T-shirts with statements on them. Of course, no such policy exists, and none was presented. The deputies then asked if the T-shirt was a protest, further stating that they wanted to circumvent any potential demonstration. So at 10 a.m., the sentencing hearing was about to start when deputies ordered Carol to take another drug test. Despite the fact that she'd already taken one, the court said another drug test was needed because her last urine sample was too diluted. Well, Carol's urine was diluted due to her need to drink water continually because she does not produce saliva due to her medical complications from extensive radiation in her battle against cancer in her jaw. So, of course, the urine sample came back drug-free, and this delayed the hearing for about an hour and a half, making the media and 30 of her supporters wait. And at 11:30 a.m., the media and Carol's supporters finally get into the courtroom and are seated, and Judge Beginney comes in and immediately points to one of Carol's supporters, ordering that he be removed from the courtroom. McGinty claimed that weeks earlier, this particular man had made a statement after a guilty verdict was read, speaking about justice, and that was not allowed. The deputies then grabbed the man by his coat, pushed him out of the courtroom, and escorted him out of the building. Judge McGinty then directed his fire at Ms. Fisher, wearing her now famous T-shirt, Wanted for Illegally Crossing Borders, the Bush Regime, which contains mugshots of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Condoleezza Rice. And he demanded that she remove her shirt. When she refused, he declared that he was postponing the sentencing till later in the day. He threatened that if Carol didn't change her shirt, he would issue a warrant for civil contempt, and he postponed the sentencing for another 4 hours. At 4:30, Carol, her supporters, and the media returned to the courtroom. Carol was still wearing her T-shirt, but the judge went on with the hearing anyway. In fact, McGinty didn't even mention the shirt until a ways into the hearing, and no warrant was ever produced. During the hearing, almost every statement given by the defense was interrupted by McGinty. A resident of Cleveland Heights had just begun to speak as to the character of Carol when she was also interrupted by the judge, complaining that he didn't want to hear a political diatribe. The character witness refused to be silenced, kept giving her statements, despite her being yelled at by the judge and surrounded by armed bailiffs. She was thrown out of the courtroom and escorted out of the building. Shortly after that, another of Carol's supporters was thrown out of the courtroom for what McGinty called sighing. Judge McGinty angrily complained that Ms. Fisher has quite a support network, having received hundreds of phone calls protesting the verdict from around the country. He went further to say that many of these calls were rude and obscene, and at least one call was being investigated. Carol remained cool and defiant during the entire proceeding. Not only did she proudly wear her T-shirt, she concluded her statement in court by telling the judge, "You want an apology? You want me to show remorse? Forget about it. Carol, thank you. Thank you for standing up for your rights." This McGinty character, you heard what we had the facts on him about being a former prosecutor that railroaded a guy into prison for, what was it, a dozen years, knew he was innocent, and the pathologist who had come up with phony information to help McGinty when he was the prosecutor convict this man, this pathologist got fired not long ago because they found out that he had phonied the evidence against this man, and they let this man out of prison. He'd been in there for 12 years, I believe it was, falsely convicted by this judge and this pathologist, and this judge helps him get a new job at, I think it was at Youngstown State University. This judge now helps this guy get a job after he'd been fired for malfeasance, for railroading a guy into prison for a dozen years, and this judge helps him get a job. This is a piece of work, this McGinty. Quite a piece of work. And it sickens you when you hear stories like this. I wanted to talk about real estate today. And I think we'll wait and do that on Thursday. Again, we're going to have a best of show tomorrow because we have a speaking engagement some distance away from where we're at tomorrow evening. And we've had that booked for a long, long time, and I don't want to disappoint those folks. And I don't want to disappoint you either, but we'll have something on in place of the show tomorrow, probably a rerun. And I do thank you for listening to the Guy James Show, not just today, but every day. Some of you are there faithfully every day. And don't forget to send that email. Do it. It'll only take a second or two. Thanks once again for listening. Do remember that you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. This has been the Guy James Show. Thanks for listening.